Have you ever been excited about a project, a task, an assignment that came from the Lord? And as you began that assignment, that project, you were so excited. And then all of a sudden, partway through the assignment, you experienced a huge stumbling block, a roadblock, a hurdle, some kind of pushback. Maybe you ran out of funds or finances. Maybe the team, the volunteer team, you lost some of the volunteers. Whatever it might be, this is normal. When God gives an assignment or a task, the enemy doesn't like it, and he's going to give pushback. Listen in today as we learn about how Ezra and his team handled the pushback coming from the enemy as they embarked on rebuilding the Holy Temple in Jerusalem. Welcome to the Daily Audio Torah. Today is August 6th. Now let's continue our journey reading through the entire Bible in 1 year. This week we are reading from the New Living Translation for the Old Testament and for the New Testament. Deuteronomy 2:16-37. When all the men of fighting age had died, the Lord said to me, "Today you will cross the border of Moab at Ar and enter the land of the Ammonites, the descendants of Lot, but do not bother them or start a war with them. I have given the land of Ammon to them as their property, and I will not give you any of their land." That area was once considered the land of the Rephaites who had lived there, though the Ammonites called them Zamzumites. They were also as strong and numerous and tall as the Anakites, but the Lord destroyed them so the Ammonites could occupy their land. He had done the same for the descendants of Esau who lived in Seir, where he destroyed the Horites so they could settle there in their place. The descendants of Esau live there to this day. A similar thing happened when the Kaphtorites from Crete invaded and destroyed the Avites who had lived in villages in the area of Gaza. Moses continued, "Then the Lord said, 'Now get moving, cross the Arnon Gorge. Look, I will hand over to you Sihon the Amorite, king of Heshbon, and I will give you his land. Attack him and begin to occupy the land. Beginning today, I will make people throughout the earth terrified because of you. When they hear reports about you, they will tremble with dread and fear.'" Moses continued, "From the wilderness of Kedemoth, I sent ambassadors to King Sihon of Heshbon with this proposal of peace. 'Let us travel through your land. We will stay on the main road and won't turn off into the fields on either side. Sell us food to eat and water to drink, and we will pay for it. All we want is permission to pass through your land. The descendants of Esau who live in Seir allowed us to go through their country, and so did the Moabites who live in Ar. Let us pass through until we cross the Jordan into the land the Lord our God is giving us." But King Sihon of Heshbon refused to allow us to pass through, because the Lord your God made Sihon stubborn and defiant so he could help you defeat him, as he has done now. Then the Lord said to me, "Look, I've begun to hand King Sihon and his land over to you. Begin now to conquer and occupy his land." Then King Sihon declared war on us and mobilized his forces at Jahaz. But the Lord our God handed him over to us, and we crushed him, his sons, and all his people. We conquered all his towns and completely destroyed everyone, men, women, and children. Not a single person was spared. We took all the livestock as plunder for ourselves, along with anything of value from the towns we ransacked. The Lord our God also helped us conquer Aroer on the edge of the Arnon Gorge, and the town in the gorge, and the whole area as far as Gilead. No town had walls too strong for us. However, we avoided the land of the Ammonites all along the Jabbok River and the towns in the hill country, all the places the Lord our God had commanded us to leave alone. Ezra 3:1-4:23. Now in early autumn, when the Israelites had settled in their towns, all the people assembled together as one person in Jerusalem. Then Jeshua, son of Jehozadak, with his fellow priests, and Zerubbabel, son of Shealtiel, with his family, began to rebuild the altar of the God of Israel, so they could sacrifice burnt offerings on it, as instructed in the law of Moses, the man of God. Even though the people were afraid of the local residents, they rebuilt the altar at its old site. Then they immediately began to sacrifice burnt offerings on the altar to the Lord. They did this each morning and evening. They celebrated the festival of Sukkot, as prescribed in the law of Moses, sacrificing the burnt offerings specified for each day of the festival. They also offered the regular burnt offerings and the offerings required for the new moon celebrations and the other annual festivals to the Lord. Freewill offerings were also sacrificed to the Lord by the people. 15 days before the festival of Sukkot began, the priests had begun to sacrifice burnt offerings to the Lord. This was also before they had started to lay the foundation of the Lord's temple. Then they hired masons and carpenters and bought cedar logs from the people of Tyre and Sidon, paying them with food, wine, and olive oil. The logs were brought down from the Lebanon mountains and floated along the coast of the Mediterranean Sea to Joppa, where King Cyrus had given permission for this. The construction of the temple of God began in mid-spring, during the second year after they arrived in Jerusalem. The workforce was made up of everyone who had returned from exile, including Zerubbabel, son of Shealtiel, Jeshua, son of Jehozadak, and his fellow priests, and all the Levites. The Levites who were 20 years old or older were put in charge of rebuilding the Lord's temple. The workers at the temple of God were supervised by Jeshua, with his sons and relatives, and Kadmiel and his sons, all descendants of Hodaviah. They were helped in this task by the Levites of the family of Henadad. When the builders completed the foundation of the Lord's temple, the priests put on their robes and took their places to blow their trumpets. And the Levites, descendants of Asaph, clashed their cymbals to praise the Lord, just as King David had prescribed. With praise and thanks they sang this song to the Lord: He is so good, his faithful love for Israel endures forever. Then all the people gave a great shout, praising the Lord because the foundation of the Lord's temple had been laid. Many of the older priests, Levites, and other leaders remembered the first temple, and they wept aloud when they saw the new temple foundation. The others, however, were shouting for joy. The joyful shouting and weeping mingled together in a loud commotion that could be heard far in the distance. The enemies of Judah and Benjamin heard that the exiles were rebuilding a temple to the Lord, the God of Israel. So they approached Zerubbabel and the other leaders and said, "Let us build with you, for we worship your God just as you do. We have sacrificed to him ever since King Esarhaddon of Assyria brought us here." But Zerubbabel, Jeshua, and the other leaders of Israel replied, "You may have no part in this work, for we have nothing in common. We alone will build the temple for the Lord, the God of Israel, just as King Cyrus of Persia commanded us." Then the local residents tried to discourage and frighten the people of Judah to keep them from their work. They bribed agents to work against them and to frustrate their aims. This went on during the entire reign of King Cyrus of Persia and lasted until King Darius of Persia took the throne. Years later, when Xerxes began his reign, the enemies of Judah wrote him a letter of accusation against the people of Judah and Jerusalem. And even later, during the reign of King Artaxerxes of Persia, the enemies of Judah, led by Bishlam, Mithradath, and Tabeel, sent a letter to Artaxerxes in the Aramaic language, and it was translated for the king. Rehum, the governor, and Shimshai, the court secretary, wrote the letter, telling King Artaxerxes about the situation in Jerusalem. They greeted the king for all their colleagues. the judges and local leaders, the people of Tarpel, the Persians, the Babylonians, and the people of Erech and Susa, that is, Elam. They also sent greetings from the rest of the people whom the great and noble Ashurbanipal had deported and relocated in Samaria and throughout the neighboring lands of the province west of the Euphrates River. This is a copy of the letter they sent him. To Artaxerxes, from your loyal subjects in the province west of the Euphrates River, please be informed that the Jews who came here to Jerusalem from Babylon are rebuilding this rebellious and evil city. They have already laid the foundation for its walls and will soon complete them. But we wish you to know that if this city is rebuilt and its walls are completed, it will be much to your disadvantage, for the Jews will then refuse to pay their tribute, customs, and tolls to you. Since we are loyal to you as your subjects, and we do not want to see you dishonored in this way, we have sent you this information. We suggest that you search your ancestors' records, where you will discover what a rebellious city this has been in the past. In fact, it was destroyed because of its long history of sedition against the kings and countries who attempted to control it. We declare that if this city is rebuilt and its walls are completed, the province west of the Euphrates River will be lost to you. Then Artaxerxes made this reply to Rehum the governor, Shimshai the court secretary, and their colleagues living in Samaria and throughout the province west of the Euphrates River. Greetings. The letter you sent has been translated and read to me. I have ordered a search to be made of the records and have indeed found that Jerusalem has in times past been a hotbed of insurrection against many kings. In fact, rebellion and sedition are normal there. Powerful kings have ruled over Jerusalem and the entire province west of the Euphrates River and have received vast tribute, customs, and tolls. Therefore, issue orders to have these people stop their work. That city must not be rebuilt except at my express command. Do not delay, for we must not permit the situation to get out of control. When this letter from King Artaxerxes was read to Rehum, Shimshai, and their colleagues, they hurried to Jerusalem and forced the Jews to stop building. First Corinthians 2:6-3:4. Yet when I, Paul, am among mature Christians, I do speak with words of wisdom, but not the kind of wisdom that belongs to this world, and not the kind that appeals to the rulers of this world, who are being brought to nothing. No, the wisdom we speak of is the secret wisdom of God, which was hidden in former times, though he made it for our benefit before the world began. But the rulers of this world have not understood it. If they had, they would never have crucified our glorious Lord. That is what the scriptures mean when they say, "No eye has seen, no ear has heard, and no mind has imagined what God has prepared for those who love him." But we know these things because God has revealed them to us by his Spirit. And his Spirit searches out everything and shows us even God's deep secrets. No one can know what anyone else is doing and is really thinking except that person alone. And no one can know God's thoughts except God's own Spirit. And God has actually given us his Spirit, not the world's Spirit, so we can know the wonderful things that God has freely given to us. When we tell you this, we do not use words of human wisdom. We speak words given to us by the Spirit, using the Spirit's words to explain spiritual truths. But people who aren't Christians can't understand these truths from God's Spirit. It all sounds foolish to them, because only those who have the Spirit can understand what the Spirit means. We who have the Spirit understand these things, but others can't understand us at all. How could they? For who can know what the Lord is thinking? Who can give him counsel? But we can understand these things, for we have the mind of Christ. Dear brothers and sisters, when I was with you, I couldn't talk to you as I would to mature Christians. I had to talk as though you belonged to this world or as though you were infants in the Christian life. I had to feed you with milk and not with solid food, because you couldn't handle anything stronger, and you still aren't ready, for you are still controlled by your own sinful desires. You are jealous of one another and quarrel with each other. Doesn't that prove you are controlled by your own desires? You are acting like people who don't belong to the Lord. When one of you says, "I am a follower of Paul," and another says, "I prefer Apollos," aren't you acting like those who are not Christians? Psalm 28:1-9. O Lord, you are my rock of safety. Please help me. Don't refuse to answer me, for if you are silent, I might as well give up and die. Listen to my prayer for mercy as I cry out to you for help, as I lift up my hands toward your holy sanctuary. Don't drag me away with the wicked, with those who do evil, those who speak friendly words to their neighbors while planning evil in their hearts. Give them the punishment they so richly deserve. Measure it out in proportion to their wickedness. Pay them back for all their evil deeds. Give them a taste of what they have done to others. They care nothing for what the Lord has done or for what his hands have made. So he will tear them down like old buildings, and they will never be rebuilt. Praise the Lord, for he has heard my cry for mercy. The Lord is my strength, my shield from every danger. I trust in him with all my heart. He helps me, and my heart is filled with joy. I burst out in songs of thanksgiving. The Lord protects his people and gives victory to his anointed king. Save your people. Bless Israel, your special possession. Lead them like a shepherd and carry them forever in your arms. Proverbs 20:24-25. How can we understand the road we travel? It is the Lord who directs our steps. It is dangerous to make a rash promise to God before counting the cost. I want to speak to you today from our reading from Ezra chapter 3 and 4. And in these two chapters, we see that the Jews have returned back to Israel, to Jerusalem, and they have begun the project of rebuilding the temple. And then they get some pushback. The pushback comes from the locals, and the locals write a letter back to the governor, to Artaxerxes, and they said, hey, in the letter, these Jews, they're seditionists, they're committing sedition and treason, and they're rabble-rousers, and it's a hotbed, and they're trying to rebuild the city and rebuild the temple, and you better put a stop to it. So Artaxerxes writes a letter back, and he says, you know, yeah, I've looked into it, and Jerusalem is full of rebellion and sedition, and that's pretty normal there, and powerful kings have ruled there, and I want you to put a stop. The city must not be rebuilt, except at my express command. Do not delay. We must not permit the situation to get out of control. So the Jews have been sent on a mission, and they were sent with the express edict and directive of King Cyrus of Babylon. But that directive, that edict, has been sort of buried. So they're getting all this interference and pushback from the locals to stop them on their mission from God to rebuild the Holy Temple. So has that ever happened to you? You're working on some kind of a project, an assignment, perhaps it's something that's from the Lord, and you feel like he gave you the directive and the assignment, and then as you proceed along, now you're running into interference. You're running into in blockage, roadblocks, and there's the resistance to going forward. What do you do? Do you assume, well, I guess it's just not God's will. He's closing the door. It's not his. If it was God's will, it would all just fall right into place. Not, that's not always the case. Remember, the enemy is at work and he works through people. But he wants to block and stop the work of God from going forward. He wants to run interference. So, what do we do when we are getting interference and pushback coming from the enemy when God's given us an assignment or a task to do? We need to push back. We need to pray and go forward. We need to pray and seek the Lord's face. The acronym PUSH is pray until something happens. So temporarily, they came to a stop in the building. They forced the Jews to stop building, and there's a pause. But I know that during that pause, they were praying and they were seeking the Lord. So if you run into a roadblock, it's your time and your moment to stop, pause, and pray, and wait for the Lord to orchestrate and to move the mountain into the sea. The word says in the New Testament, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain to be cast into the sea, and it will be cast into the sea. Now, it may not be a literal mountain, it may be some kind of a mountain of, it's a symbolic mountain. Maybe there's a lack of funds, maybe there's a lack of will, a lack of resources, a lack of laborers, whatever it might be. But we are to depend upon the Lord because He has an infinite supply of resources. And if we know that we are in the will of God, if we're getting interference, it's the pushback that's coming from the enemy. So when the enemy pushes back, we are to push through. I'll say that again. When the enemy pushes back, we are to push through and keep our eyes on Jesus. Have a blessed day, and we'll see you tomorrow. Shalom.
The Aaronic Blessing from Numbers chapter 6, 24 to 26. Adonai bless you and keep you. Adonai make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. Adonai lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace.